Hello, hello, hello. Welcome all in to the Wide World of Wargaming X-Wing segment number 23. As always, I am your host, Vincent Morgado. Joining me, as per the usual, Mr. Jeff Wilder.
Your powers are weak, old man.
Well, I know he's not talking to me because I'm the youngest one on the podcast. And joining us for the second time, Mr. Rick Riddell.
Are you the youngest one? Because, anyway, Star Wars meme quote, now this is pod racing. Let's go.
I'm pretty sure I am. Rick, how old are you?
28.
Oh, God, he's younger than me. sorry, I got used to it with Drew being older than me, which is always a shock. We have a lot on our plate tonight. First, we want to apologize to any Resistance players that do follow the show. We have neglected you, and so tonight we will be covering the Resistance transport. We also want to address a little article that came across the wire from Mr. Andrew Lauritsen, talking about FFG dice, shall we say, questionably manufactured. And last but not least, with the calendar bearing down on June the 25th, we are going to do one more discussion about the points changes we want to see and try not to backtrack over the last seven times we talked about it. But as we said, first and foremost, let's have a look at that Resistance transport, which I think you can hear Rick cutting open in the background.
Yes. I was taking a look at the article and theory crafting with some other people and my own head. And I realized, you know what? I might actually want two of these things on the table. And I only pre-ordered one. And that might have also just been me making an excuse for myself to go down to Barnes & Noble and buy one off the shelf. But I have a opened Resistance transport pod directly in front of me right now. And it is small. Like, real, real small.
Should be about B-wing sized, right?
Fully assembled, it's B-wing sized, but when you take just the pod out, it's I would compare it to a focus token.
Wow.
The pod is the size of a focus token?
Yeah. Hmm.
That's hilarious. Well, I just want to get this out of the way. I have not been really impressed with any of the pilots I've seen out of this thing. Except, I could say Noden Chavdry. I could see myself playing that as because it's my kind of plus action. You know what I mean? It's not dissimilar to Lieutenant Sai out of Imperials, where you coordinate someone and then you perform one action on your bar, except you can do it if you're stressed, which is pretty cool. But other than that, I haven't seen anything out of this that I really like. Maybe BB-8 performing a red booster barrel roll before it or during the system phase. To kind of try to get himself out of trouble. But that's all I got. I don't see a whole lot here as far as straight pilot abilities go.
Looking at Noden, there's definite options in there for just ridiculous amounts of action chaining when you combine it with some of the crew cards. Unfortunately, right. Noden's dial doesn't have the stop or the reverse maneuvers. So it's
Just so you know, they have a red stop.
The red stop is on the pod. Is on just the pilot pod.
According to Yasby, it's on the...
Do I have the dials reversed?
I think you do. I think the transport has the stop and the pod doesn't.
I will pop this off the...
Yeah.
Oh,
according
good
to Yasby,
lord. Oh, good lord. That changes
there you go.
Things. Okay. That makes it better. Because you could even, like, so you can kind of...
Yeah, that's an improvement. It doesn't suck anymore.
Yeah. You can go backwards and coordinate your friend. And then, even though you're double stressed, you also had a ridiculous, ridiculous turn just there. You're like, nope, I'm noping out of that engagement. And my buddy over there is yeeting in with with extra mods.
And I still, you know, I still have a focus or a target lock depending on which crew I take for personal use.
Yeah.
Because no one ever expects the purple-haired Admiral Holdo.
There's a lot of hype about Holdo at the start of the leaks because, yeah, she's really good. And she has the potential to make a Resistance bomber have double reinforce, which, you know, cool.
Huh?
Yeah, so she can...
Oh! I got it. I just figured it out. Go ahead.
You pass a ship a reinforced token, and then somehow they get a engagement phase action, or you know they have a reinforce for the front and the rear because they're surrounded. You know, just details. But I think some of the hidden gems in this crew department are the two droids. Larma Dacey is going to combo incredibly well with Noden. Because, hang on, let me read Larma. Well, you have two or fewer stress tokens. You can perform coordinate and reinforce actions even while stressed. Okay, so that is Noden's ability. Who was I thinking of?
I think you were talking about PZ4CO before the show.
Yes, I was talking about PZ4CO, who has, because of the calculate action, can be coordinated from anywhere by C3PO, and then also passes a focus or calculate token at the end of activation. And so you can throw a token over to a bumped ship. You can throw an extra focus token to a ship that has multiple target locks on it. You can throw a focus token onto Poe after he boosts and barrel rolls. There's just a whole bunch of different combos in there that you can set up. And if done right, you can create triple action scenarios on multiple ships in the same list.
So I just want to, you know, jump back a little bit. You can actually do that without that combo just by going Holdo. If you, like, for example, if you are running Poe and you do decide you want to pop Black One, you can come out of Black One and then use Holdo to exchange the disarm token or the ion token for whatever the transport nearby is holding. So it's not unlike Plo Koon that a lot of people are – well, not a lot – that a few people are starting to realize is really cool for eating up disarm tokens after a regen action or after a regen from the droids on other
Speaking
Jedi.
Speaking of Plo Koon, you can slap angle deflectors on Plo Koon and spend a force to give a Arc or, you know, Anakin Skywalker a reinforced token.
Yeah, I'm not real excited about.
Oh, I didn't say it was good.
Okay, cool.
It was hilarious.
Jeff, what about you? What are you getting out of all this? Who's your pick of the litter as far as Resistance crew cards go?
As far as the crew, let me just say that as far as the pilots and some of the crew goes, you can see that FFG has learned from stuff like Zuckuss, where things that allow you to do stuff even when you're stressed are limited by the number of stress you have.
Yeah.
The thing about that is that is good. It's good that they learned, but it's difficult for me to get too excited about an ability that allows you to do something when you're double stressed. You know what I mean? Part of the value of the ability is the ability to do it while you're double stressed. And I'm like, do I really want to count on being double stressed in order to pay for this ability for this pilot? So that's the main thing that jumps out at me. A couple of the pilots and a couple of the crew have that kind of ability going on. As far as the crew goes, I mean, I see the thing that Rick's talking about with PZ4CO. The thing is that seems interesting, and it players that like shenanigans will like it, but it seems self-limiting in that if PZ4CO is on one side of the board and the rest of your squadron's on the other side of the board, what's to keep somebody from jumping on the PC4CO side of the board?
So responding to that really quickly, PZ4CO would be with the main force. It would be a random.
Oh, sorry. Right.
It would be a random ship like Finn or something on off by himself with 3PO on board.
Carrying 3PO.
Yeah, that's just right. Waiting to go get nuked by a player who realizes that's the weak point in the list and free points.
Right, gotcha. And that's why I think it's self-limiting, is that it's in order to get that full sort of shenanigan value out of it, you've got to have your force split. And then the player, even just the default, I'll start in this corner and you start in the opposite corner, even that deployment sort of makes it hard to pull off.
Right.
So I don't know. I think it's going to be fun for people to try. I don't think it's going to be a problem or anything like that. I was interested that Rick told us before the show that the ship is really, really small. The pod especially. How did you describe it, Rick?
The pod is basically the size of a focus token. It's obviously a little bit larger in three dimensions, but it's just holding up a ship ID token next to it. It has the same length and width as the ID token that goes in a dial cover.
Huh. Because it's a B-wing, it's supposed to be a B-wing pod, right?
The whole transport is about the size, actually it's probably a little bit smaller than a B-wing model, but the pod detaches so you can fly the smaller pod version of the ship.
Like a tiny little tip of your pinky ship on the board. That's,
yeah,
it's like, that's hilarious. I thought the attack shuttle was small.
the
ether strike, for that matter.
It's big.
Huh. So I've just been looking at the looking through the pilots, and like Kova Nell, when you defend or perform a primary attack, if your reveal maneuver is red, roll one additional die. I mean, you understand why they limit that, but this thing's going to be able to carry a cannon, right? So that's going to, you're not going to be carrying a cannon with Kova Nell.
And you just slap Leia on there. And so you go backwards, make it white, even though it's a red maneuver. And then you get your extra die and you take your focus token.
Right. So it's a three die ship.
Yeah. With Leia on board, it's a cheese factory.
Yeah.
It's also, well, hang on. All right. You can go ahead and slap a cannon on your resistance transport with Leia and try to turn it into a combat shuttle all you want, guys. You're going to feed me something like 50, 60 points. Because I'll tell you what. One evade die, three hole, five shields. You know what happens to Y-Wings? They die quickly.
It has
two. I don't care if you...
Because you're...
The transport has one. Not if you use Leia.
You revealed a red maneuver. It doesn't say if you're stressed. It says if you revealed a red maneuver.
Okay, you go ahead and you can have it. I'll give it to you.
I'm not saying
I will still come in and I will roast this thing while you're trying to combat shuttle it up with a resistance transport.
The point is that it doesn't work as that sort of combat shuttle because the ability doesn't work with cannons. I do want to point out that a heavy laser cannon is only 4 points. So
yeah.
Hey, I mean. Resistance is about the only faction that gets any use out of cannons in the current game anyway.
I'm not super impressed with the expansion. I think that there are obviously some good cards in here, and I think that there are going to be cards that are going to end up broken. Like possibly Leia, depending on how much she costs. People are talking.
Oh, Leia on a Ray shuttle on a Ray Falcon. Yeah, go ahead.
I will openly admit.
Let's just start there.
I have full intentions on putting Resistance Han with Ray and Leia, and then a nice Poe flying wing on the table at some point.
Well, you can't put Ray and Leia. The Falcon doesn't have three crew slots.
Ray's
a gunner. Yeah. Oh Christ!
I will openly admit that is one of the first things I am flying. After point
this is me. This is Fat Han 2.0. Like, forget the handbrake Han.
I mean, I seriously think it's possible it's going to be 20 points.
Yeah.
I hope she better start at 20.
Leia will be the most expensive force user in the game.
Really? More than 26
really,
points?
Really, you think so?
Okay, just kidding. I forgot about Luke.
Who is trash?
Okay, the most expensive Force user you will take when you are not purposely trolling by taking the most expensive.
Price. Okay, there we go. Yeah, because she's nuts. Like, she's just nuts. Yeah. Between the purple core, between giving the Falcon a purple coordinate, or the ability to mod dice, or the ability to reduce a maneuver in difficulty, like you're talking about, this is playable in just about every phase of the game. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Without Leia crew, there's like the Han I would want to run is 103 points. So even at say 123 points, you can still throw a 75 point Poe on the table.
Yeah.
And 70.
Yeah, you can. Jesus. Which is what? Black one, heroic, and...
Let me build it out real quick. So Poe starts at 68.
One for heroic, two for black one, and then you've got four left.
Why heroic? Why not just go straight to BB? Eight? No, that's 77.
Because heroic is better.
Black one. Because, you know, you could spend Leia to make his three hard BB blue, eight, and then you could do... But yeah.
Oh
dear. Yep. Okay. All right. I can buy that with Leia on the board. I buy that.
Yeah. So 69 points for heroic Poe, and that gives you what did I say? Like another 5 points to play around with.
Say it's six. You get six more. But even then, I don't think you fit BB-8 with six. But that's beside the point. You've got a 69 point Poe with a gigantic. Double force modding shuttle, or double force modding Falcon.
And you can
like
the title.
Yeah, no, there's your cheese factory
engine upgrade off of Han.
I don't know if you even really need the engine upgrade if you have Leia.
Okay, so ditch that, and suddenly you just saved 7 points you can put into Poe.
Right, there you go. Like, I'm just saying, you could step. There's a lot of ways when Leia opens up a lot of things with that ability. And if you double it up with Rey, you don't need to really conserve her force for mods.
Yeah. I think whether or not the Resistance transport sees success or even play on the table, we're going to see Leia. We're going to see both of the droids and possibly even this Corcella. Crew, like the upgrades are going to see play whether
absolutely.
The ship itself sees play.
I just want to correct something that we got wrong earlier. The transport is agility one.
Oh, got it.
Right? Did we say it was two?
We said it was two if you
just
pull a red maneuver.
One specific way where if Kova Nell does a red maneuver that Leia wants.
You're right. I just want to ask, is there any reason not to put Leia on Rey?
Yes. Because Rey is arc locked and Gunner Rey is just hands down better than actual Rey.
Yep.
Right, but if you went with ship Rey, you're still getting...
3/4.
Yeah. I mean, you're basically going with the Maul strategy, right?
Yeah, you're just trying
of
to
just stack as much force as possible.
Yeah, but then, again, I sincerely think you're not making the best possible Falcon simply because Rey's ability only procs in her front arc, whereas Gunner Rey procs in any arc, which isn't necessarily advantageous on offense, but is incredible on defense.
Right. That's the problem with the Resistance Falcon is it doesn't have – it's got fewer hit points. And when Rey wants to keep front arc on something, Rey's taking shots. And with fewer hit points and no really good ways to mitigate the damage, the ship just dies so fast.
Well, that's the thing is they have it now. There's no you can put deflectors on this, can't you?
But then you're burning your action on a reinforce.
Why do you care? You have 3 force. And you probably have multiple ships.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying the possibility is there, and somebody's gonna find. Like you guys know, somebody is gonna go full gunship Rey at least once.
Exactly. Yes, everything is going to need to see the table at least a little bit for us to flesh out what is stronger, what is weaker, what is more optimal. And then you're going to have that one player who throws down five Cartel Marauders and wins a tournament. Like,
oh, guys, I just found a way to do it, by the way. Do you run the crew Larmadasi on Ray with the Millennium with the Ray's Falcon upgrade, and you're Signor looping and reinforcing while you're able to, because she lets you do it with up to two stress.
Yes, and then the next turn,
there you
go.
And
then you're never clearing that stress because you're always going to be doing a blue maneuver into a red reinforce.
Why is a reinforce red?
Because Larma, read the second half of Larma.
While you perform a white.
It says if you are stressed.
So you're double stressed and you do a blue maneuver, you clear one stress. And then if you want to take that reinforce action, you're stressed. And so you have to take a red reinforce action to get your second stress right back. And it becomes a continuous cycle of you living on double stress.
Unless and then you run Corsella.
Yeah. But then you also have used both your crew slots and can't fit Leia.
You can't fit Leia if you run Larma at all. So,
right.
I mean, I'm thinking of how do you build the best gunship, which would be this Rey plus Finn, this Rey plus.
And then you can put Finn crew.
Yeah. Or your Finn gunner.
Yeah.
But Finn gunner. See what I'm talking about, the sort of limitations you run into when you're dealing with these crew and pilots that don't want to be double stressed, but their abilities work even when you're double stressed.
Well, it's a good thing. Like you said, like you don't want people running wild on no stress limits.
Absolutely. It's a good thing, but it's also really hard to use effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So
your dial becomes a lot more predictable.
Yeah. I mean, technically with dampeners, you could see resistance doing their own handbrake on.
I mean,
you don't have as much health to play around with. You don't have the completely broken R2-D2 combo.
Right. That's the big thing.
Because if you slap deflectors on it, then you only have two shields, which means you have at most two uses of dampers.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
I've always assumed that the real strength of Handbrake Han is the ability to, you know, make decisions after you see a lot of, if not all, possible information.
Right.
That's only my point.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I don't want to be shooting down your ideas. I just want to provide counterpoints and
No.
And temper them.
Rick, believe me, this is close quarters combat, the show. Trust me. If you've ever listened, you know that's how we roll here.
The Handbrake Han just has so many pieces that just perfectly came together, like throwing Tetris blocks up into the air and they just happen to fall in a perfect line, you know? I think Handbrake Han is going to be nuked in some fashion. I just don't see a way to build it, thank God, with the other Hans.
Speaking of Handbrake Han and being nuked and points adjustments, I saw an interesting take where somebody took data that wasn't necessarily helpful data, but it still told a story once he processed it. And the story it said is that the way to fix Handbrake Han is to raise the price on every single component in it.
That's the nuclear option I think most people were talking about when they said, how do we fix this?
Well, people were talking about taking away the illicit, but if you're not taking away the illicit, then actually, no, I stand corrected. Every single component went up by more than 1 point in this model, except for inertial dampeners, which went down one.
That's just overcorrection for a list that really isn't even winning events,
right. Unless you're Jack Lenny, at which point
It seems to me Handbrake Han has two linchpins. One is inertial dampeners working with Kanan.
Yep.
The other is the R2-D2 only having consequences 14% of the time. I think if you fix both of those,
unless you measure the your dice to see if there's any
right and then it's 16.4% of the time.
Or if you're that one green, if you're that one green die, like 8% of the time, the one that was rolling blanks, like -5% or 5% more often.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's got one of my dice.
Jeff, I think all of your dice are that die. I think you might have like a long lost cousin over in that dice pile.
Yeah, I'm rolling fine streak ever since I stopped using my transparent dice, and I'm not saying there's a correlation. Actually, I am saying there's a correlation. I'm not saying there's causation, but there is correlation. So we should probably tell people what in the hell we're talking about.
Yes. I think now's a good time to move on to that. We've gone through most of the crew cards and spent a nice chunk of time on it. As we said, Andrew Lauritzen, who's, I'm not sure where he's from, but he is known in the community and a member of the Minox, the Fly Better Facebook group, did a very detailed, I have to give credit where credit's due, physical role analysis of his dice.
And yeah, he homie found went to the trouble of building a dice rolling machine. Yep.
Yeah, basically. That's legit insanity. But he did it, and all the respect in the world for it.
This dice rolling machine was built so that he could run trials of 20,000. Now, trials of 20,000 when you're simulating something on a machine, on a computer, are nothing. Trials of 20,000 when you're talking about rolling a die, that's, you're starting to get into some serious time investment there. So the machine and then the webcam to read the result. That's some pretty impressive work that he put into this.
It's not work I would ever bother to do.
I'm sorry. I have neither the patience nor the intelligence to even consider trying to do what he pulled off. But essentially what he came across was that most of the die he had were rolling 1.5 to, I think the base number he came up with was 1.5 to 2% off positive or negative. And off statistical mean. Thank you for the correct phrasing. And essentially his conclusion was that is enough over a game of X-Wing, considering how many die you roll every turn to constitute an influential amount. And now this wasn't, I don't think he did this with any of the hyperspace trial dice or the old regional dice. It was just the core set dice.
Core set dice through all eras of the game.
What did you guys think of all that? I mean, we all know that variance is part of the game, but when you have dice coming out that we joked about it just a minute ago, but one of the green die he rolled was coming in 5% more likely to roll a blank than a regular green die should. And I just immediately thought of Jeff.
Yeah, I have 14 of those. the thing that's interesting that jumped out at me from it immediately was, okay, this is going to surprise a lot of people and raise a furor. Because just to be clear, he's, for those of you without statistical background, he's not saying that over 20,000 rolls, a die had a 1.6% difference. What he's saying is that even adjusted for expectation, the dice had a difference up or down. And two things jumped out at me immediately. The first was how incredibly few of the dice were not biased. Mm-hmm. It was like in the total of 30 dice he did, I think it was 3.
Yeah. Significantly less than half was what I noticed. I didn't bother looking at the exact numbers. I was just like scrolling through, and it seemed like 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 dice was rated as fair.
Yeah. So the second thing that jumped out at me, though, was people are going to be surprised by this. They're going to raise a furor over it. But if you take any set of polyhedrals for role-playing dice, any set of dice included in a Monopoly game from Target, whatever, you're going to get these same results. The precision of dice rolling and of dice manufacturing in mass marketed games is simply not very good. There is a reason that if you go to Vegas and you play craps, the croupier inspects a die that rolls off the table, because those are precision dice and those dice are very expensive. And if you can replace one that gives you a 5% edge, that is immense in a casino environment. A 5% edge is just unbelievable in a casino environment. Mm-hmm. But this should not surprise people who know how dice are manufactured for mass market games.
Okay.
I have to admit, I was very surprised by that. But, you know, it did bring back some memories from other games, and I hate bringing that up too much, but it did bring up kind of this old question with custom dice versus they were either painted or stamped for custom use compared to like regular mass production dice. And there were a lot of times where it was found that custom made dice for like swag or for specific teams were coming up hotter than normal. And seriously hotter than normal. It's like, dear God, how many different games do we have to come up to where dice are going to be like a where we have to worry about the dice of all things?
So we have very different reactions. I'm fairly new to the miniatures gaming community. The first miniatures game I ever played is X-Wing, and the only miniatures game I've ever played is X-Wing. And I joined the community about 2 years ago, almost exactly. And when I saw this article, my very first instinct was, okay, how did he measure bias? Like, how did he confirm that dice were biased? Like, what indicates a bias? And how do I go check my dice for it? And then I stopped for a half second and went, would you actually feel comfortable if you went to a tournament and won knowing you had brought your most biased dice? And I was like, no, I wouldn't. I would feel so dirty and ashamed of myself.
That's the good for you, honestly. Good for you.
Yeah.
And then, so I read the article.
There are people that will not feel that way, by the way.
Correct answer.
I know elite players who have admitted that they've searched out cardboard ship tokens with wider firing arcs, that misprinted wider firing arcs.
I've heard about that before, and that disappoints me, but I feel like that's a little bit different, because, like...
No, you're right. That's actually cheating.
Yeah. A, that's actually cheating, and B, that's, like, your opponent is aware of that and can counterplay that a little bit. Not really, but sort of. The dice thing, like... No, the dice rolling is what introduces the randomness into the game and makes it not just a pure tactical turn-based chess game. So the dice rolling adds that random element, and if you rig that, then you are rigging the core base like premise of the game. And I feel like that's not cool. And so while I really appreciate this guy doing this research and identifying that our gut reaction that our dice are trying to kill us is good, and I love having that research done, I also kind of wish it hadn't been done and that we didn't know this, because it's going to add a whole nother layer of people gaming the system.
It's also going to increase the whining. Which, I mean, I fully admit that I am I'm not a saint. I complain about dice because
yep.
Look, it happens. Now this is official proof of what I've been saying. Like, this is now giving a lot of people like me more fuel for the conspiracy theories. And it's also, the problem is it's kind of, you can't, like a good conspiracy theory, you can't really disprove it. because if I go to an event and I get blown out of the water by a guy and I have this in the back of my head and I don't like him for some reason, I can just go, yeah, he just brought a bunch of loaded dice.
So for what it's worth, the difference they're talking about in the that he's talking about in his dice is not the difference of blowing somebody out of the water or not. I know you're just mostly joking, but it is a very slight difference. It's a real difference over the course of a game, but it's a very slight difference. We're talking about the difference between killing a ship or not killing a ship in a typical game, and that's major. But it's not blowing somebody out of the game major.
It's to the level where it makes you not have to choose between taking a focus and a target lock, because you know, oh, this die rolls blanks at a significantly lower rate. I'm never going to take a focus because it's already probably going to roll paint type situation.
Right. This goes back to, you know, me watching games of Nathan Idy on Twitter where I'm literally screaming in chat, do his dice even have blanks? Is kind of where I start thinking, because some people just roll hot and we all know who they are. And then some people we're going to start thinking, do they roll hot dice? And that's, so I do want to give Dion Morales a lot of respect because he's actually kind of headed this off at the pass. He already requires that people use stream dice. Like, he has his own set that people have to use and share when they play on his show. So, I mean, you know, good on him for being way out ahead of it months ago.
Well, he wasn't ahead of this. That was for visibility.
Yeah.
He didn't necessarily have to do that.
I mean, literally visibility, so that the dice show up on his dice cam.
Yep.
Well, isn't
that's why he did that?
Okay, fair. If that's the reason, then that's the reason. I didn't know that's what it was. If he wasn't just letting people use, you know, regular core set dice, he would allow that compared to his dice. That's all. That settles that question.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt anything, but it's still it resolves its problem because it's a common dice pool, which is the easy resolution, which is, oh, you're first player, great. You're first player, I'm second player. We use first player's templates, second player's dice. Like, cool, problem solved. But I really hope the game doesn't get to that level.
Just look at number 12 green. Jesus Christ. Like, I want to know what happened with the manufacturer of that die. Like, did somebody take a scoop out of it? Like, does it have a dent in its head?
I'm telling you, man, it is. You'd be amazed how normal that is. It's just that you have to line them up with other dice and really look, and you'll see it. You'll see it, with a naked eye in a surprising number of your dice. It's just mass production dice. It's the way it works.
It's just the molds, huh?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, there was this old dude, what was his name? Science something. He made these dice. These are RPG dice.
Oh, Game Science? Are you talking about Game Science?
Game Science.
Yeah.
Game Science. So his dice are sharp-edged. Yes. And the reason for this is that any time you tumble dice to get that aesthetically pleasing rounded edge, you're introducing bias. It's impossible not to, which is why he always was like, look, our dice aren't that pretty, but our dice are fair. Let me stack up 20 dice of ours compared with any 20 dice you want to stack up, and you're going to see their 20 lean and are significantly either taller or shorter than ours every single time. And it's true.
Yeah, science dice are pretty infamous in a lot of other war games for being as close to statistically neutral as possible.
That nobody wants that.
I mean, it's like there are guys who were playing with those in 40K when I started, and I lived in terror of them because their dice just rolled exactly what you expect. So there's no, like, you would see people start, you would be like praying for a terrible roll out of a guy. And then you'd see he'd reach and pull out a stack of like 20 or 12 science dice, and you'd just be like, I'm fucked.
I don't think it's going to be too big a deal, to be honest. I think the thing about sharing dice is that if we're genuinely worried that some people are going to perform this test at whatever ridiculous expense, pick out their best dice, then it doesn't do any good to share the dice, because they may be, if they're flying a list that wants focuses, they're picking their dice for focuses.
Yeah.
Right? If I'm with them, if I'm playing them and I'm sharing their dice, but I've got an ordnance heavy list that wants target locks, then I'm still getting screwed.
Yeah.
There's no real good fix for it. And well, given yes, that there's is. No it's real upping good the
quality fix of production. For it,
well, that's true. But man, it's expensive. It might not be a terrible idea to have premium mm-hmm. dice packs. Might not be a terrible idea, but it'll be expensive.
Or, I mean, the other solution is to just stop with their fascination with first party only dice.
Yeah.
First party only dice prevents the problem from being worse than it is.
Well, I mean, we thought that was probably
yeah,
true.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you sure? it's not, you know, well, go ahead, Jeff.
My Nerdex dice. So I have two sets of Nerdex dice. It's this outfit in Germany, and they're solid black and solid white dice, with, you know, the symbols in red and green on them. They are significantly higher quality. Now, I have no idea as far as bias goes, because, you know,
you haven't run the simulation.
Right. Their quality of the dice, you can just look at them and see that their quality is higher than even my regionals dice,
mm-hmm.
right? Which are smaller batch dice. And so, I mean, honestly, if somebody brought Nerdex dice to a tournament, I would personally not have a problem with letting them use them. That's just me. I think that the prohibition against the dice is exactly what Rick said, where they're worried about introducing this problem, but the production dice already clearly have the problem.
I'm not saying it's not worried about introducing.
I think he's talking
people
about
people purposely making
go ahead,
worse I'm, dice.
Yeah. Yes. You know, the thing is, with the number of games that are being streamed now, that problem kind of I imagine that problem will not come up because of how many people are like, even if this article just brings awareness, people are going to start watching each other's dice now. Like, the level of paranoia has now been ratcheted up even further than I suspect it already was. And, you know, it will not be the first time somebody in an event goes, "Hey, dude, give me your dice. Like, I'm sorry, this is bullshit. Let's go talk to the TO." And there's, you know, as long as you put in something in the rules that say if there's a serious question about dice, the TO should be allowed to look.
As a TO, I don't think that's a problem.
That's
kind of useless.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I can just
again.
Okay, fair enough.
You're overestimating the effect that the dice are going to have on a game. If somebody's rolling hot, 99% of the time they're rolling hot because they are benefiting from variance. They're not rolling hot because they have unfair dice.
For example, if I can interrupt, at Seattle System Open in the hyperspace trials, I conceded at the end of turn three because my opponent had rolled, I believe it was 16 out of 17 paint on his attack dice that turn. And I had rolled 4 out of 14 paint on my green dice.
Man after your own heart, Jeff.
So thus,
yeah, no kidding.
You fit right in on the show, Rick.
And so I lost. I lost two strike. One of my strikers was initiative killed. One of my strikers was killed, and Vader was on one hole, and Duchess was undamaged. And I was like, "This is a joke." And so I conceded right then and there. And I came back and I watched that guy play some more, and his dice did not roll that well in other games. And so in that situation, yeah, I can look at his dice and be like, "Are you kidding me?" But at the same time, like, if I went on to the next game and, oh, lo and behold, he rolls 15 out of 18 paint on his attack dice, and then he rolls 18 out of 18 paint, I'm gonna go to the judge and be like, can we double check something here? But because I saw him like roll triple blanks on an energy cell charge, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I just bum luck.
I just think it behooves. I mean, I think it behooves everyone to pay attention to what somebody else is using for their dice. And I would have no objection to Andrew's solution, which is everyone donates. You know, essentially split the pool. Don't use all of one player's. You bring some of yours. They bring some of theirs. You know, 3-2 and 2-3, or you know, some kind of shared pool, so that we can avoid even the scenario Jeff was talking about. Because
you run into the small logistical problem there of some people are just bizarrely attached to their own stuff, no matter how fungible it is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but these eight green dice that are all from core sets, if you really need to find out which three are yours, really yours, then I'm suspicious.
Exactly, yes.
You're either seriously OCD or there's something.
I will
let's put a big or on it.
I do not like my dice mixing, and if one of my dice got mixed, I get really annoyed and try to figure out which one is mine by looking at the coloration. And if I can't figure it out, then I just roll all of their green dice and take an evade. And because of that, that's one of the reasons why I now use solely my my hyperspace dice is because it's really easy to tell which dice are mine.
Yes. I'm the same way with all my gear. I like being able to tell what is mine. But if the stuff is truly fungible, it doesn't bother me. I don't care if you end up with one of my red dice from one of my core sets and I got one of your red dice from one of your core sets. But I don't want you walking off with, you know, my one turn with a Vader quote on it, you know. But the takeaway is, it's for good and ill, the actual effect on a game is going to be mild. That's good because the actual effect is going to be mild. That's bad because you're not going to notice it when it's happening to you.
Sure.
You're just not.
Well, all right. Jeff has a bedtime that he has to be that we have to uphold. So we are going to jump into our last little conversation. Unfortunately, we ran a little bit over on our dice conspiracy theories, but that was fun anyway. It's a week till the points readjust it's a week till the points readjust. What do you all really, if you had to put down cash money, I want two predictions that you would bet with Vegas on. Start with Rick. And no Leia, no Phantoms.
Can I lay down that I think BB-8 then the shuttle pod is going to come in at a whopping 27 points?
Okay.
So that's one.
Sure.
Wow. That's pretty ballsy.
I have no. I'll tell somewhere the someone in, you know, someone collating in Vegas is going.
I mean, that's fairly reasonable. That's less than a premium TIE fighter for a ship with good ability and 4 hit points.
Is the pod 2-2?
Yeah, 2 attack, 2 agility, 3 hull.
3-1.
Oh, my God.
Meaning it's a little bit worse than an attack shuttle. So there's that. And it only has one crew. And its dial does not have a zero stop. And it has a calculate action, but it has a 6 system phase ability. So I'm comparing it to L3, who is 1 initiative lower. Anyway, so that's one prediction. My prediction is BB-8 in the shuttle pod at 27 points. The other prediction, I've been flying a lot of Imperials, and I don't think Soontir goes up by more than 1 or 2 points if he goes up.
Okay. Radical. That one's a little bit less, shall we say, adventurous. Jeff, go ahead. You got 2. Give me 2.
So I think Afterburners will be initiative scaled.
Okay.
I think that this is kind of a hope. This isn't so much I put odds down in Vegas, but I'd like to see the M12, the Chemohila, come down just a little bit.
Is that to give Scum a medium alternative to the fire spray?
Kind of. And
second missile slot, if I can plug that one.
For barrage rockets?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, but the generic is 44 points, and granted it's 9 hit points, but it's only 1 agility. It doesn't have a back arc or anything like that. And it is just, for whatever reason, it is just unloved. It is, I don't know. I think I'm almost starting to think that in order for it to see any kind of serious play, it's going to need to be at a broken cost, which kind of depresses me. But I'd like to see them come down pretty much across the board a couple of points. And I think there's a good chance of that. It's not something that I would bet on, but I think there's a good chance. And I'm taking a bonus one. Wedge is going to go up, and I don't really think he deserves to. I don't think Wedge is the problem in Rebel Beef, but I do think...
My money on Wedge is...
I agree. 55. I think that's what Wedge is going to end up at.
Oh, there goes my night. All right. Well, I am going to piss off Vegas because, you know, gambling stupidly is one of the things that I excel at. I think Vader's going to go up to 70. And I demand that he go up to 70. I wish bad things upon Darth Vader. There you go. I'll edit that into the proper place. And then the other one is I really want the veteran turret gunner to go probably to – it's currently 6. I would be happy with it. I would like it to go to 9.
I'd like it to go to like 20.
I think a 50% tax on VTG solves its problem with the Dreadlocks. It solves its problem with the Y-ons, and it makes it a little bit more of a question when it comes to – it also prevents any kind of shenanigans that might come out with arcs in the future.
I think they should put it back to 8 just because 9 is an oscillation. Like, it starts at 8, they drop it to 6, that's too much. Are they really going to oscillate back past 8?
Well, okay, sure. I mean, I just don't know if putting it back to 8 solves the problem.
I would like to see it be eroded to remove the mobile arc indicator from its text and instead just say you cannot shoot through an arc you shot through this turn. Thus, you cannot double tap, double front.
Yeah, kind of the way that people thought it might work at the very beginning.
Yep. I think that's really all it needs. It can
It would need to go down in price at that point.
Yeah. But that's really where it's being abused. It's not being abused because of price. It's being abused because it's tie D.
Well,
only better.
The thing is that I don't think that's likely because it's absolutely intentional that it worked the way that it does. The BTLA 4.
Right. It's to give heavies and slower ships an ability to make up for lost opportunity with weight of dice.
Well, yeah. But more specifically, it's because the BTLA 4 had the linked turret and forward firing guns. And
it should remove the rotate action because that was also what the BTLA 4 was. The turret was slaved forward.
I do want to jump in one thing, Jeff, that you mentioned. I think the reason nobody flies the Chemogila is that it's just ugly as hell.
True, except I have a gorgeous repaint.
False. It's a gorgeous ship. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous ship to the point where I paid to have one of my Lancer class pursuit crafts repainted to match Mickey Magilla's.
That's because the Lancer is good looking, but the paint isn't great.
The Key Magilla is a very gorgeous ship. The reason why it's not played is because with a 3-die primary, you need proton torpedoes to get any sort of value out of munitions. And so then you're just looking at, it's basically the Scum B-Wing through and through, but it's a medium base that strength is a reload action that it never uses.
I mean, its real strength is a bullseye, is a really good bullseye ability.
Right.
But it's low in it.
Yep. Well, all right. On the first time I think we've ever mentioned the Key Magilla on the show, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Rick, thank you so much for coming back.
Of course. Happy to be here.
And we look forward to bringing you back again. As always, Jeff, thank you very much. And listeners, to you, I say thank you, and we hope to see you again next week. Thank you for making episode 22 our most downloaded segment of all time. We look forward to bringing you back again. Have a good night.
Y'all have a good week.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.